hello, everybody. It's time for Reading with Rick again. And we've made it to the end of a very long week, haven't we? It's Friday night. We're ready for the weekend, and whatever that means. We are going to read another children's book tonight. And the name of the children's book this evening is Snowy Rolly by William Joyce. I know most of the snow is gone, but we might get one more little taste of snow here with tonight's book. So it's called Snowy Rolly. And then we're going to do something a little bit different once we end with that book. Then we're going to read a book or a story for some of the older kids tonight, and maybe even the moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and the grown-ups. And that is going to be an American classic short story by a great author named Mr. John Steinbeck. So that's coming up here. And let's get started with tonight's reading with Rick and Snowy Rolly. Okay, here we look at the cover and we've got a whole bunch of snowmen standing there, and they're wearing a red and white scarf, almost like a candy cane, it looks like. And they all have red hats with what looks like a snowball on top. And standing one on each side looks like a boy and a girl, but they don't really look like boys and girls. They're actually kind of, well, they're just round. And they have legs and arms and everything, but they're all yellow. And the girl is wearing a pink dress, but the two are made up of yellow balls, it looks like. They're just all round. And we're going to be meeting them right now. Snowy Rolly by William Joyce. Rolly Poly Oly lived in a land where it never snowed. He often wished for the wonders of a snowy day could bring. And they show Oly standing on a hill in a bright blue sky, and it must be warm out because he's not wearing a coat or mittens or anything. Then one bright morning, the sun that shone on Oly's world blew a bulb, and it started to snow. As the world grew white all around, Oly and Zoe, that's the girl, Oly and Zoe began to build a friend. And you've all done that. They're rolling up a big ball of wet snow. And they named him Mr. Snowy. Oh, what fun it was to ride with Snowy on their sleigh. And they're going down on a nice sled down a steep hill. And they're having all kinds of fun in the snow with Mr. Snowy right on the back. But the sun got a brand new bulb. So the world became warm and the snow became melty. What to do? What to do? They had to find a way to keep Mr. Snowy cool. They took Mr. Snowy into the house. They're trying to push him into the refrigerator. I don't think that's going to work, but at least they're trying. So they took a worthy risk and rocketed to Chillsville with the AC on full blast, the air conditioning. And they're flying up to Chillsville in a sleigh, it looks like. We know who has a sleigh in the winter, don't we? The snow-capped mountains showed them the way. And they are up there in Chillsville now, and they're coming into land, and there is snow all over, and there's snowmen all over, too. But the north wind tried to eat them up, and down they crashed to a place they'd heard of only in stories. "Welcome to Chillsville," said Clanky Claus. "You must be hungry from your travels." They feasted on snowdrop soup, icicle cake, and sky-high snowball pie. Wow, look at that pie. It's all stacked up like a big, big curly cue like you'd get at Dairy Queen or something. They must have got the sprinkles because it's all covered in candy. And they're eating bowls of ice cream. Oh, I bet it's snowdrop soup. That's what they're eating out of the bowls. Boy, that looks like they're going to get plenty to eat there. And after that, they all lined up and danced a chili cha-cha. All the snowmen are lined up together, and right at the end, you've got Oli right at the end. They danced that cha-cha all the way to Mr. Snowy's cool new house. And Mr. Snowy, it looks like he's going to live in a snow house, which is shaped just like a teapot. Short and stout. "We'll miss you, Mr. Snowy," said Zoe. But you'll be safe from now on," said Oli. They're saying goodbye. It was so hard to say goodbye, and Oli and Zoe were giving Mr. Snowy some goodbye hugs, and they all looked sad. "We wished for snow, and we got a new friend," said Oli. "I wish we could stay together," sighed Zoe as they rocketed away. They're headed back home, leaving Mr. Snowy behind. The journey home was swift and sure. Soon sleep came, and snowy dreams helped smiles return. By morning, the snow was almost gone, and where Snowy once stood, there was a present. And they're opening up the present and looking inside, and they found a happy reminder of their faraway friend. Guess what the present was? What would remind them of their faraway friend? Have you ever seen a snow globe? It's got like a curved piece of glass with some maybe like water inside. And when you shake it, it looks like it's snowing inside. And there's Snowy and Oli and Zoe inside the snow globe. So anytime they want to see their friend, all they have to do is shake the snow globe. Happy, sad, and everything in between. What wonders a single snowy day can bring. And that's the end of Snowy Roly. So they wished for snow. They got snow. They made Mr. Snowy. But it warmed up again, and they had to bring Mr. Snowy to Chillsville and leave him behind. But Mr. Snowy made sure that they'd always remember him with a present. So that was a good story by Mr. William Joyce called Snowy Roly. We'll be back again on Monday, and we'll have another kid's book for you, a young child's book, I guess. And then we'll also resume. We're going to shift gears a little bit for our second reading on Monday. I was gifted a great set of books by a local author, and we're going to start that on Monday for our second reading, and that is from, the author is Shelley Boyenbreen, and she's originally from Brainerd. And so we're going to start with some of her books, and she wrote about a girl named Shelley Bean, the sports queen. And so we're going to talk and read some of those books in the near future. So that'll start next week. So get ready for Shelley Bean, the sports queen, and her friends and adventures. So that is what's coming up for Monday. But coming up yet tonight, we're going to shift gears a little bit. And we are going to read an American classic short story by Mr. John Steinbeck. And it's titled The Red Pony. Thank you. right, welcome back to Reading with Rick as we get ready for our Friday night edition of a little bit more advanced reading here tonight. And if they're still up, I forgot to say hi to Carson and Blake and Lane Klein. Mom told me that they were listening tonight. So have a good weekend, Carson, Blake, and Lane, and all of the young listeners, and have a great weekend. We'll come back on Monday with some more stories. But now, we should almost call this maybe some Friday night fireside reading. This would be a good read at the fireside. This is a book, a story, actually, by author John Steinbeck, and he wrote this back in 1933, kind of in the heart of the Depression era. And it's actually a story that he, they call it serializing, and he would write part of it and submit it to a magazine, and they would publish that, and then a little while later, part two of the story would read, and it didn't get really published as a whole book until 1945, I think. So it took a while for them all to be put together. They went in the magazines from 1933 to 1936. No, this, it says the full book was published in 1937. So over a course of 4 years, the story was put together. And it's about a boy, a pony, and it's just a great story. Mr. John Steinbeck wrote this. It's called The Red Pony, and this is broken down into four different chapters, and I really don't know how long this is going to go. I'm just going to go until, let's say, we get to 8:30. I'll cut it off at 8:30, or we'll see. We're going to play this one by ear tonight for us. So here it is. This is John Steinbeck, The Red Pony. Chapter 1, The Gift. At daybreak, Billy Buck emerged from the bunkhouse and stood for a moment on the porch looking up at the sky. He was a broad, bandy-legged little man with a walrus mustache, with square hands puffed and muscled on the palms. His eyes were contemplative, watery gray, and the hair, which protruded from under his Stetson hat, was spiky and weathered. Billy was still stuffing his shirt into his blue jeans as he stood on the porch. He unbuckled his belt and tightened it again. The belt showed, by the worn shiny places opposite each hole, the gradual increase of Billy's middle over a period of years. When he had seen to the weather, Billy cleared each nostril by holding its mate closed with his forefinger and blowing fiercely. Then he walked down to the barn, rubbing his hands together. He curried and brushed two saddle horses in the stalls, talking quietly to them all the time. And he had hardly finished when the iron triangle started ringing at the ranch house. Billy stuck the brush and curry comb together and laid them on the rail and went up to breakfast. His action had been so deliberate and yet so wasteless of time that he came to the house while Mrs. Tiflin was still ringing the triangle. She nodded her gray head to him and withdrew into the kitchen. Billy Buck sat down on the steps because he was a cowhand and it wouldn't be fitting that he should go first into the dining room. He heard Mr. Tiflin in the house stamping his feet into his boots. The high, jangling note of the triangle put the boy Jody into motion. He was only a little boy, 10 years old, with hair like dusty yellow grass, and with shy, polite gray eyes, and with a mouth that worked when he was thinking. The triangle picked him out of his sleep. It didn't occur to him to disobey the harsh note. He never had. No one he knew ever had. He brushed the tangled hair out of his eyes and skinned his nightgown off, and in a moment he was dressed, blue chambray shirt and overalls. It was late in the summer, so of course there were no shoes to bother with. In the kitchen, he waited until his mother got from in front of the sink and went into the stove. Then he washed himself and brushed back his wet hair with his fingers. His mother turned sharply on him as he left the sink, and Jody looked shyly away. "I've cut your hair before long," said his mother. "Breakfast on the table. Go on in so Billy can come." Jody sat at the long table, which was covered with white oilcloth washed through to the fabric in some places. The fried eggs lay in rows on their platter. Jody took 3 eggs on his plate and followed with 3 thick slices of crisp bacon. He carefully scraped a spot of blood from one of the egg yolks. Billy Buck clumped in. "That won't hurt you," Billy explained. "That's only a sign the rooster leaves." Jody's tall, stern father came in then, and Jody knew from the noise on the floor that he was wearing boots, but he looked under the table anyway to make sure. His father turned off the oil lamp over the table, for plenty of morning light now came through the windows. Jody did not ask where his father and Billy Buck were riding that day, but he wished he might go along. His father was a disciplinarian. Jody obeyed him in everything, without question of any kind. Now Carl Tiflin sat down and reached for the egg platter. "Got the cows ready to go, Billy?" he asked. "In the lower corral," Billy said. "I could just as well take them in alone." "Sure you could, but a man needs company. Besides, your throat gets pretty dry." Carl Tiflin was jovial this morning. Jody's mother put her head in the door. "What time do you think to be back, Carl?" "I can't tell. I've got to see some men in Salinas. Might be gone till dark." The eggs and coffee and big biscuits disappeared rapidly. Jody followed the two men out of the house. He watched them mount their horses and drive six old milk cows out of the corral and start over the hill toward Salinas. They were going to sell the old cows to the butcher. When they disappeared over the crown of the ridge, Jody walked up the hill in back of the house. The dogs trotted around the house corner, hunching their shoulders and grinning horribly with pleasure. Jody patted their heads. Doubletree Mutt, with the big, thick tail and yellow eyes, and Smasher, the shepherd, who'd killed a coyote and lost an ear in doing it. Smasher's one good ear stood up higher than a collie's ear should. Billy Buck said that always happened. After the frenzied greeting, the dogs lowered their noses to the ground in a businesslike way and went ahead, looking back now and then to make sure that the boy was coming. They walked up through the chicken yard and saw the quail eating with the chickens. Smasher chased the chickens a little to keep in practice in case there should ever be sheep to herd. Jody continued on through the large vegetable patch where the green corn was higher than his head. The cow pumpkins were green and small yet. He went on to the sagebrush line where the cold spring ran out of its pipe and fell into a round wooden tub. He leaned over and drank close to the green mossy wood where the water tasted best. Then he turned and looked back on the ranch, on the low, whitewashed house girded with red geraniums, and on the long bunkhouse by the cypress tree where Billy Buck lived alone. Jody could see the great black kettle under the cypress tree. That was where the pigs were scalded. The sun was coming over the ridge now, glaring on the whitewash of the houses and barns, making the wet grass blaze softly. Behind him, in the tall sagebrush, the birds were scampering on the ground, making a great noise among the dry leaves. The squirrels piped shrilly on the side hills. Jody looked along at the farm buildings and felt an uncertainty in the air, a feeling of change and of loss and of the gain of new and unfamiliar things. Over the hillside, two big black buzzards sailed low to the ground, and their shadows slipped smoothly and quickly ahead of them. Some animal had died in the vicinity. Jody knew it. It might be a cow, or it might be the remains of a rabbit. The buzzards overlooked nothing. Jody hated them, as all decent things hate them, but they could not be hurt because they made away with carrion. After a while, the boy sauntered down the hill again. The dogs had long ago given him up and gone into the brush to do things in their own way. Back through the vegetable garden he went, and he paused for a moment to smash a green muskmelon with his heel. But he was not happy about it. It was a bad thing to do, and he knew that perfectly well. He kicked dirt over the ruined melon to conceal it. Back at the house, his mother bent over his rough hands, inspecting his fingers and nails. It did little good to start him clean to school, for too many things could happen on the way. She sighed over the black cracks on his fingers and then gave him his books and his lunch and started him on the mile walk to school. She noticed that his mouth was working a good deal this morning. Jody started his journey. He filled his pockets with little pieces of white quartz that lay in the road, and every so often he took a shot at a bird or some rabbit that had stayed sunning itself in the road too long. At the crossroads over the bridge, he met two friends, and the three of them walked to school together, making ridiculous strides and being rather silly. School had just opened 2 weeks before. There was still a spirit of revolt among the pupils. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when Jody topped the hill and looked down on the ranch again. He looked for the saddle horses, but the corral was empty. His father wasn't back yet. He went slowly, then, toward the afternoon chores. At the ranch house, he found his mother sitting on the porch, mending socks. "There's two donuts in the kitchen for you," she said. Jody slid to the kitchen and returned with half of one of the donuts already eaten and his mouth full. His mother asked him what he'd learned in school that day, but she didn't listen to his donut-muffled answer. She interrupted, "Jody, tonight, see you fill the wood box clear full. Last night you crossed the sticks, and it wasn't only about half full. Lay the sticks flat tonight. And Jody, some of the hens are hiding eggs, or else the dogs are eating them. Look about in the grass and see if you can find any nests." Jody, still eating, went out and did his chores. He saw the quail come down to eat with the chickens when he threw out the grain. For some reason, his father was proud to have them come. He never allowed any shooting near the house for fear the quail might go away. When the wood box was full, Jody took his .22 rifle up to the cold spring at the brush line. He drank again and then aimed the gun at all manner of things, at rocks, at birds on the wing, at the big black pig kettle under the cypress tree. But he didn't shoot, for he had no cartridges, and he wouldn't have until he was 12. If his father had seen him aim the rifle in the direction of the house, he would have put the cartridges off for another year. Jody remembered this and did not point the rifle down the hill again. 2 years was enough to wait for cartridges. Nearly all of his father's presents were given with reservations, which hampered their value somewhat, and it was good discipline. The supper waited until dark for his father to return. When at last he came in with Billy Buck, Jody could smell the delicious brandy on their breaths. Inwardly he rejoiced, for his father sometimes talked to him when he smelled of brandy, sometimes even told things he had done in the wild days when he was a boy. After supper, Jody sat by the fireplace, and his shy, polite eyes sought the room corners, and he waited for his father to tell what it was he contained, for Jody knew he had some news of some sort. But he was disappointed. His father pointed a stern finger at him. "You'd better go to bed, Jody. I'm going to need you in the morning." That wasn't so bad. Jody liked to do things he had to do as long as they weren't routine things. He looked at the floor and his mouth worked out a question before he spoke it. "What are we going to do in the morning, kill a pig?" he asked softly. "Never you mind. You better get to bed." When the door was closed behind him, Jody heard his father and Billy Buck chuckling, and he knew it was a joke of some kind. And later, when he lay in bed trying to make words out of the murmurs in the other room, he heard his father protest, "But Ruth, I didn't give much for him." Jody heard the hoot owls hunting mice down by the barn, and he heard a fruit tree limb tap-tapping against the house. A cow was lowing when he went to sleep. When the triangle sounded in the morning, Jody dressed more quickly, even than usual. In the kitchen, while he washed his face and combed back his hair, his mother addressed him irritably. "Don't you go out until you get a good breakfast in you." He went into the dining room and sat at the long white table. He took a steaming hot cake from the platter, arranged 2 fried eggs on it, covered them with another hot cake, and squashed the whole thing with his fork. His father and Billy Buck came in. Jody knew from the sound on the floor that both of them were wearing flat-heeled shoes, but he peered under the table to make sure. His father turned off the oil lamp, for the day had arrived, and he looked stern and disciplinary, but Billy Buck didn't look at Jody at all. He avoided the shy, questioning eyes of the boy and soaked a whole piece of toast in his coffee. Carl Tiflin said crossly, "You come with us after breakfast." Jody had trouble with his food then, for he felt a kind of doom in the air. After Billy had tilted his saucer and drained the coffee, which had slopped into it, and he had wiped his hands on his jeans, the two men stood up from the table and went out into the morning light together, and Jody respectfully followed a little behind them. He tried to keep his mind from running ahead and tried to keep it absolutely motionless. His mother called, "Carl, don't you let it keep him from school." They marched past the cypress where a single tree hung from a limb to butcher the pigs on, and past the black iron kettle, so it was not a pig killing. The sun shone over the hill and threw long dark shadows of the trees and buildings. They crossed a stubble field to shortcut to the barn. Jody's father unhooked the door and they went in. They'd been walking toward the sun on the way down. The barn was black as night in contrast and warm from the hay and from the beasts. Jody's father moved over toward the one-box stall. "Come here," he ordered. Jody could begin to see things now. He looked into the box stall and then stepped back quickly. A red pony colt was looking at him out of the stall. Its tense ears were forward, and a light of disobedience was in its eyes. Its coat was rough and thick as an Airedale's fur, and its mane was long and tangled. Jody's throat collapsed in on itself and cut his breath short. "He needs a good currying," his father said, "and if I ever hear of you not feeding him or leaving his stall dirty, I'll sell him off in a minute." Jody couldn't bear to look at the pony's eyes any more. He gazed down at his hands for a moment, and he asked very shyly, "Mine?" No one answered him. He put his hands out towards the pony. Its gray nose came close, sniffing loudly, and then the lips drew back, and the strong teeth closed on Jody's fingers. The pony shook its head up and down and seemed to laugh with amusement. Jody regarded his bruised fingers. "Well," he said with pride, "well, I guess he can bite all right." The two men laughed, somewhat in relief. Carl Tiflin went out of the barn and walked up a side hill to be by himself, for he was embarrassed. But Billy Buck stayed. It was easier to talk to Billy Buck. Jody asked again, "Mine?" Billy became professional in tone. "Sure. That is, if you look out for him and break him right. I'll show you how. He's just a colt. You can't ride him for some time." Jody put out his bruised hand again, and this time the red pony let his nose be rubbed. "I ought to have a carrot," Jody said. "Where'd we get him, Billy?" "Bought him at a sheriff's auction," Billy explained. "A show went broke in Salinas and had debts. The sheriff was selling off their stuff." The pony stretched out his nose and shook his forelock from his wild eyes. Jody stroked the nose a little and said softly, "There isn't a saddle?" Billy Buck laughed. "I'd forgot. Come along." And in the harness room, he lifted down a little saddle of red Morocco leather. "It's just a show saddle," Billy Buck said disparagingly. "It isn't practical for the brush, but it was cheap at the sale." Jody couldn't trust himself to look at the saddle either, and he couldn't speak at all. He brushed the shining red leather with his fingertips, and after a long time he said, "It'll look pretty on him, though." He thought of the grandest and prettiest things he knew. "If he hasn't a name already, I think I'll call him Gabalon Mountains," he said. Billy Buck knew how he felt. "It's a pretty long name. Why don't you just call him Gabalon? That means hawk. That would be a fine name for him." Billy felt glad. "If you collect tail hair, I might be able to make a hair rope for you sometime. You could use it for a hackamore." Jody wanted to go back to the box stall. "Could I lead him to school, do you think, to show the kids?" But Billy shook his head. "He's not even halter broke yet. We had a time getting him here. Had to almost drag him. You'd better be starting for school, though." "I'll bring the kids to see him here this afternoon," Jody said. Six boys came over the hill half an hour early that afternoon, running hard, their heads down, their forearms working, their breath whistling. They swept by the house and cut across the stubble field to the barn. And then they stood self-consciously before the pony. And then they looked at Jody with eyes in which there was a new admiration and a new respect. Before today, Jody had been a boy, dressed in overalls and a blue shirt, quieter than most, even suspected of being a little cowardly. And now he was different. Out of a thousand centuries, they drew the ancient admiration of the footman for the horseman. They knew instinctively that a man on a horse is spiritually as well as physically bigger than a man on foot. They knew that Jody had been miraculously lifted out of equality with them and had been placed over them. Gabalon put his head out of the stall and sniffed them. "Why don't you ride him?" the boys cried. "Why don't you braid his tail with ribbons like in the fair? When are you going to ride him?" Jody's courage was up. He, too, felt the superiority of the horseman. "He's not old enough. Nobody can ride him for a long time. I'm going to train him on the long halter. Billy Buck is going to show me how." "Well, can't we even lead him around a little?" "He isn't even halter broke," Jody said. He wanted to be completely alone when he took the pony out for the first time. "Come and see the saddle." They were speechless at the red Morocco saddle, completely shocked out of comment. "It isn't much use in the brush," Jody explained. "It'll look pretty on him, though. Maybe I'll ride bareback when I go into the brush." "How you gonna rope a cow without a saddle horn?" "Maybe I'll get another saddle for every day. My father might want me to help him with the stock." He let them feel the red saddle and showed them the brass chain throat latch on the bridle and the big brass buttons at each temple where the headstall and brow band crossed. The whole thing was too wonderful. They had to go away after a little while, and each boy, in his mind, searched among his possessions for a bribe worthy of offering in return for a ride on the red pony when the time should come. Jody was glad when they were gone. He took brush and curry comb from the wall and took down the barrier of the box stall and stepped cautiously in. The pony's eyes glittered, and he edged around into kicking position. But Joey touched him on the shoulder and rubbed his high arched neck as he'd always seen Billy Buck do, and he crooned, "Sue boy," in a deep voice. The pony gradually relaxed his tenseness. Jody curried and brushed until a pile of dead hair lay in the stall and until the pony's coat had taken on a deep red shine. Each time he finished, he thought it might have been done better. He braided the mane into a dozen little pigtails, and he braided the forelock, and then he unknitted them and brushed the hair out straight again. Jody did not hear his mother enter the barn. She was angry when she came, and when she looked at the pony and at Jody working over him, she did feel a curious pride rise up in her. "Have you forgot the wood box?" she asked gently. "It's not far off from dark, and there's not a stick of wood in the house, and the chickens aren't fed." Jody quickly put up his tools. "I forgot, ma'am." "Well, after this, do your chores first. Then you won't forget. I expect you'll forget lots of things now if I don't keep an eye on you." "Can I have carrots from the garden for him, ma'am?" She had to think about that. "Oh, I guess so, if you only take the big tough ones. Carrots keep the coat good," he said, and again she felt the curious rush of pride. Jody never waited for the triangle to get him out of the bed after the coming of the pony. It became his habit to creep out of bed even before his mother was awake, to slip into his clothes and go quietly down to the barn to see Gabalon. In the gray, quiet mornings when the land and the brush and the houses and the trees were silver gray and black like a photograph negative, he stole toward the barn, past the sleeping stones and the sleeping cypress tree. The turkeys roosting in the tree out of coyote's reach clicked drowsily. The fields glowed with a gray, frost-like light, and in the dew the tracks of rabbits and of field mice stood out sharply. The good dogs came stiffly out of their little houses, hackles up and deep growls in their throats. Then they caught Jody's scent, and their stiff tails rose up and waved a greeting. Doubletree Mutt, with the big, thick tail, and Smasher, the incipient shepherd, then went lazily back into their warm beds. It was a strange time and a mysterious journey to Jody, an extension of a dream. When he first had the pony, he liked to torture himself during the trip by thinking Gabalon would not be in his stall, and worse, would never have been there. And he had other delicious little self-induced pains. He thought how the rats had gnawed ragged holes in the red saddle, and how the mice had nibbled Gabalon's tail until it was stringy and thin. He usually ran the last little way to the barn. He unlatched the rusty hasp of the barn door and stepped in, and no matter how quickly he opened the door, Gabalon was always looking at him over the barrier of the box stall, and Gabalon whinnied softly and stamped his front foot, and his eyes had big sparks of red fire in them like oak wood timbers. Sometimes, if the workhorses were to be used that day, Jody found Billy Buck in the barn harnessing and currying. Billy stood with him and looked long at Gabalon, and he told Jody a great many things about horses. He explained that they were terribly afraid for their feet, so that one must make a practice of lifting the legs and patting the hooves and ankles to remove their terror. He told Jody how horses love conversation. He must talk to the pony all the time and tell him the reasons for everything. Billy wasn't sure a horse could understand everything that was said to him, but it was impossible to say how much was understood. A horse never kicked up a fuss if someone he liked explained things to him. Billy could give examples, too. He'd known, for instance, a horse nearly deadbeat with fatigue to perk up when told it was only a little further to his destination. And he had known a horse paralyzed with fright to come out of it when his rider told him that it was what it was that was frightening him. While he talked in the mornings, Billy Buck cut 20 or 30 straws into neat 3-inch lengths and stuck them into his hatband. Then, during the whole day, if he wanted to pick his teeth or merely chew on something, he had only to reach up for one of them. Jody listened carefully, for he knew, and the whole country knew, that Billy Buck was a fine hand with horses. Billy's own horse was a stringy cayuse with a hammerhead, but he nearly always won the first prizes at the stock trials. Billy could rope a steer, take a double half hitch about the horn with his riata, and dismount, and his horse would play the steer as an angler plays a fish, keeping a tight rope until the steer was down or beaten. Every morning, after Jody had curried and brushed the pony, he let down the barrier of the stall, and Gabalon thrust past him and raced down the barn and into the corral. Around and around he galloped, and sometimes he jumped forward and landed on stiff legs. He stood quivering, stiff ears forward, eyes rolling so that the whites showed, pretending to be frightened. At last he walked snorting to the water trough and buried his nose in the water up to the nostrils. Jody was proud then, for he knew that was the way to judge a horse. Poor horses only touched their lips to the water, but a fine-spirited beast put his whole nose and mouth under and only left room to breathe. Then Jody stood and watched the pony, and he saw things he'd never noticed about any other horse. The sleek, sliding flank muscles and the cords on the buttocks, which flexed like a closing fist, and the shine the sun put on the red coat. Having seen horses all his life, Jody had never looked at them very closely before, but now he noticed the moving ears which gave expression and even inflection of expression to the face. The pony talked with his ears. He could tell exactly how he felt about everything by the way his ears pointed. Sometimes they were stiff and upright, and sometimes lax and sagging. They went back when he was angry or fearful, and forward when he was anxious and curious and pleased, and their exact position indicated which emotion he had. Billy Buck kept his word. In the early fall, the training began. First, there was the halter breaking, and that was the hardest because it was the first thing. Jody held a carrot and coaxed and promised and pulled on the rope. The pony set his feet like a burro when he felt the strain. But before long, he learned. Jody walked all over the ranch leading him. Gradually, he took to dropping the rope until the pony followed him, unled, wherever he went. And then came the training on the long halter. That was slower work. Jody stood in the middle of a circle, holding the long halter. He clucked with his tongue, and the pony started to walk in a big circle, held in by the long rope. He clucked again to make the pony trot, and again to make him gallop. Around and around, Gabalon went thundering and enjoying it immensely. Then he called, "Whoa!" and the pony stopped. It was not long until Gabalon was perfect at it. But in many ways, he was a bad pony. He bit Jody in the pants and stomped on Jody's feet. Now and then, his ears went back, and he aimed a tremendous kick at the boy. Every time he did one of these bad things, Gabalon settled back and seemed to laugh to himself. Billy Buck worked at the hair rope in the evenings before the fireplace. Jody collected tail hair in a bag, and he sat and watched Billy slowly constructing the rope, twisting a few hairs to make a string and rolling two strings together for a cord, and then braiding a number of cords to make the rope. Billy rolled the finished rope on the floor under his foot to make it round and hard. The long halter work rapidly approached perfection. Jody's father, watching the pony stop and start and trot and gallop, was a little bothered by it. "He's getting to be almost a trick pony," he complained. "I don't like trick horses. It takes all the dignity out of a horse to make him do tricks. Why, a trick horse is kind of like an actor. No dignity, no character of his own." And his father said, "I guess you better be getting him used to the saddle pretty soon." Jody rushed for the harness room. For some time, he had been riding the saddle on a sawhorse. He changed the stirrup length over and over and could never get it just right. Sometimes, mounted on the sawhorse in the harness room, with collars and hames and tugs hung all about him, Jody rode out beyond the room. He carried his rifle across the pommel. He saw the fields go flying by, and he heard the beat of the galloping hooves. It was a ticklish job saddling the pony for the first time. Gabalon hunched and reared and threw the saddle off before the cinch could be tightened. It had to be replaced again and again until, at last, the pony let it stay. And the cinching was difficult, too. Day by day, Jody tightened the girth a little more until at last the pony didn't mind the saddle at all. Then there was the bridle. Billy explained how to use a stick of licorice for a bit until Gabalon was used to having something in his mouth. Billy explained, of course we could force break him to everything, but he wouldn't be as good a horse if we did. He'd always be a little bit afraid, and he wouldn't mind because he wanted to. The first time the pony wore the bridle, he whipped his head about and worked his tongue against the bit until the blood oozed from the corners of his mouth. He tried to rub the headstall off on the manger. His ears pivoted about, and his eyes turned red with fear and with general rambunctiousness. Jody rejoiced, for he knew that only a mean-souled horse does not resent training. And Jody trembled when he thought of the time when he would first sit in the saddle. The pony would probably throw him off. There was no disgrace in that. The disgrace would come if he didn't get right up and mount again. Sometimes he dreamed that he lay in the dirt and cried and couldn't make himself mount again. The shame of the dream lasted until the middle of the day. Gabalon was growing fast. Already he had lost the long-leggedness of the colt. His mane was getting longer and blacker. Under the constant currying and brushing, his coat lay as smooth and gleaming as orange-red lacquer. Jody oiled the hooves and kept them carefully trimmed so they would not crack. The hair rope was nearly finished. Jody gave him an old pair of spurs, and he bent in the sidebars and cut down the strap and took up the chainlets until they fit. And one day, Carl Tiflin said, "The pony's growing faster than I thought. I guess you can ride him by Thanksgiving. Think you can stick on?" "I don't know," Jody said shyly. Thanksgiving was only 3 weeks off. He hoped it wouldn't rain, for rain would spot the red saddle. Gabalon knew and liked Jody by now. He nickered when Jody came across the stubble field, and in the pasture he came running when his master whistled for him. There was always a carrot for him every time. Billy Buck gave him riding instructions over and over. "Now when you get up there, just grab tight with your knees and keep your hands away from the saddle. And if you get thrown, don't let that stop you. No matter how good a man is, there's always some horse can pitch him. You just climb up again before he gets to feeling smart about it. Pretty soon he won't throw you no more, and pretty soon he can't throw you no more. That's the way to do it." "I hope it don't rain before," Jody said. "Why not? Don't you want to get throwed in the mud?" That was partly it, and also he was afraid that in the flurry of bucking, Gabalon might slip and fall on him and break his leg or his hip. He'd seen that happen to men before, had seen how they writhed on the ground like squashed bugs, and he was afraid of it. He practiced on the sawhorse how he would hold the reins in his left hand and a hat in his right hand, and if he kept his hands thus busy, he wouldn't grab the horn if he felt himself going off. He didn't like to think of what would happen if he did grab the horn. Perhaps his father and Billy Buck would never speak to him again. They'd be so ashamed. The news would get out about it, and his mother would be ashamed too in the schoolyard. Oh, it was too awful to contemplate. He began putting his weight in a stirrup when Gabalon was saddled, but he didn't throw his leg over the pony's back. That was forbidden until Thanksgiving. Every afternoon he put the red saddle on the pony and cinched it tight. The pony was learning already to fill his stomach out unnaturally large while the cinching was going on, and then to let it down when the straps were fixed. Sometimes Jody led him up to the brush line and let him drink from the round green tub, and sometimes led him up through the stubble field to the hilltop, from which it was possible to see the white town of Salinas and the geometric fields of the great valley and the oak trees clipped by the sheep. Now and then they broke through the brush and came to little cleared circles so hedged in that the world was gone and only the sky and the circle of brush were left from the old life. Gabalon liked these trips and showed it by keeping his head very high and by quivering his nostrils with interest. When the two came back from an expedition, they smelled of the sweet sage they had forced through. Time dragged on toward Thanksgiving, but winter came fast. The clouds swept down and hung all day over the land and brushed the hilltops, and the winds blew shrilly at night. All day the dry oak leaves drifted down from the trees until they covered the ground, and yet the trees were unchanged. Jody had wished it might not rain before Thanksgiving, but it did. The brown earth turned dark and the trees glistened. The cut ends of the stubble turned black with mildew. The haystacks grayed from exposure to the damp. And on the roofs, the moss, which had been all summer as gray as lizards, turned a brilliant yellow-green. During the week of rain, Jody kept the pony in the box stall out of the dampness, except for a little time after school when he took him out to exercise and to drink at the water trough in the upper corral. Not once did Gabalon get wet. The wet weather continued until the little new grass appeared. Jody walked to school dressed in a slicker and short rubber boots. At length, one morning, the sun came out brightly. Jody, at his work in the box stall, said to Billy Buck, "Maybe I'll leave Gabalon in the corral when I go to school today." "Be good for him to be out in the sun," Billy assured him. "No animal likes to be cooped up too long." "Your father and me are going back on the hill to clean the leaves out of the spring." Billy nodded and picked his teeth with one of his little straws. "If the rain comes, though," Jody suggested, "not likely to rain today. She's rained herself out." Billy pulled up his sleeves and snapped his armbands. "If it comes on to rain, why, a little rain don't hurt a horse." "Well, if it does come to rain, you put him in the stall, will you, Billy? I'm scared he might get cold, so I couldn't ride him when the time comes." "Oh, sure. I'll watch out for him if we get back in time, but it won't rain today." And so Jody, when he went to school, left Gabalon standing out in the corral. Billy Buck wasn't wrong about many things. He couldn't be. But he was wrong about the weather that day. For a little after noon, the clouds pushed over the hills and the rain began to pour down. Jody heard it start on the schoolhouse roof. He considered holding up one finger for permission to go to the outhouse and, once outside, running for home to put the pony in. Punishment would be prompt both at school and at home. He gave it up and took ease from Billy's assurance that rain couldn't hurt a horse. When school was finally out, he hurried home through the dark rain. The banks at the side of the road spouted little jets of muddy water. The rain slanted and swirled under a cold and gusty wind. Jody dog-trotted home, slopping through the gravelly mud of the road. From the top of the ridge, he could see Gabalon standing miserably in the corral. The red coat was almost black and streaked with water. He stood head down with his rump to the rain and wind. Jody arrived running and threw open the barn door and led the wet pony in by his forelock. Then he found a gunny sack and rubbed the soaked hair and rubbed the legs and ankles. Gabalon stood patiently, but he trembled in gusts like the wind. When he had dried the pony as well as he could, Jody went up to the house and brought hot water down to the barn and soaked the grain in it. Gabalon was not very hungry. He nibbled at the hot mash, but he was not very much interested in it, and he still shivered now and then. A little steam rose from his damp back. It was almost dark when Billy Buck and Carl Tiflin came home. "When the rain started, we put up at Ben Hershey's place, and the rain never let up all afternoon," Carl Tiflin explained. Jody looked reproachfully at Billy Buck, and Billy felt guilty. "You said it wouldn't rain," Jody accused him. Billy looked away. "It's hard to tell this time of year," he said, but his excuse was lame. He had no right to be fallible, and he knew it. "The pony got wet, got soaked through. Did you dry him off?" "I rubbed him with a sack, and I gave him hot grain." Billy nodded in agreement. "Do you think he'll take cold, Billy?" "A little rain never hurt anything," Billy assured him. Jody's father joined the conversation then and lectured the boy a little. "A horse," he said, "isn't any lapdog kind of thing." Carl Tiflin hated weakness and sickness, and he held a violent contempt of helplessness. Jody's mother put a platter of steaks on the table and boiled potatoes and boiled squash, which clouded the room with their steam. They sat down to eat. Carl Tiflin still grumbled about weakness put into animals and men by too much coddling. Billy Buck felt bad about his mistake. "Did you blanket him?" he asked. "No, I couldn't find any blanket. I laid some sacks over his back." "We'll go down and cover him up after we eat then." Billy felt better about it then. When Jody's father had gone into the fire and his mother was washing dishes, Billy found and lighted a lantern. He and Jody walked through the mud to the barn. The barn was dark and warm and sweet. The horses still munched their evening hay. "You hold the lantern," Billy ordered, and he felt the pony's legs and tested the heat of the flanks. He put his cheek against the pony's gray muzzle, and then he rolled up the eyelids to look at the eyeballs and lifted the lips to see the gums, and he put his fingers inside the ears. "He don't seem too chipper," Billy said. "I'll give him a rub down." Then Billy found a sack and rubbed the pony's legs violently, and he rubbed the chest and the withers, and Gabalon was strangely spiritless. He submitted patiently to the rubbing. At last, Billy brought an old cotton comforter from the saddle room. He threw it over the pony's back and tied it at the neck and chest with string. "Now he'll be all right in the morning," Billy said. Jody's mother looked up when he got back to the house. "You're laid up from bed," she said. She held his chin in her hard hand and brushed the tangled hair out of his eyes, and she said, "Don't worry about the pony. He'll be all right. Billy's as good as any horse doctor in the country." Jordy hadn't known she could see his worry. He pulled gently away from her and knelt down in front of the fireplace until it burned his stomach. He scorched himself through and then went into bed, but it was a hard thing to go to sleep. He awakened after what seemed a long time. The room was dark, but there was a grayness in the window like that which precedes the dawn. He got up and found his overalls and searched for the legs, and then the clock in the other room struck two. He laid his clothes down and got back into bed. It was broad daylight when he awakened again. For the first time, he had slept through the ringing of the triangle. He leapt up, flung on his clothes, and went out of the door, still buttoning his shirt. His mother looked after him for a moment and then quietly went back to her work. Her eyes were brooding and kind. Now and then her mouth smiled a little, but without changing her eyes at all. Jody ran on toward the barn. Halfway there, he heard the sound he dreaded, the hollow, rasping cough of a horse. He broke into a sprint then. In the barn, he found Billy Buck with the pony. Billy was rubbing its legs with his strong, thick hands. He looked up and smiled gaily. "He just took a little cold," Billy said. "We'll have him out of it in a couple of days." Jody looked at the pony's face. His eyes were half closed and the lids thick and dry, and in the eye corners a crust of hard mucus stuck. Gabalon's ears hung loosely sideways and his head was low. Jody put out his hand, but the pony did not move close to it. He coughed again and his whole body constricted with the effort. A little stream of thin fluid ran from his nostrils. Jody looked back at Billy Buck. "He's awful sick, Billy." "Just a little cold, like I said," Billy insisted. "You go get some breakfast and then go back to school. I'll take care of him." "But you might have to do something else. You might leave him." "No, I won't. I won't leave him at all. Tomorrow's Saturday. Then you can stay with him all day." Billy had failed again, and he felt bad about it. He had to cure the pony now. Jody walked up to the house and took his place listlessly at the table. The eggs and bacon were cold and greasy, and he didn't notice it. He ate his usual amount. He didn't even ask to stay home from school. His mother pushed his hair back when she took his plate. "Billy'll take care of the pony," she assured him. He moped through the whole day at school. He couldn't answer any questions nor read any words. He couldn't even tell anyone the pony was sick, for that might make him sicker. And when school was finally out, he started home in dread. He walked slowly and let the other boys leave him. He wished he might continue walking and never arrive at the ranch. Billy was in the barn, as he'd promised, and the pony was worse. His eyes were almost closed now, and his breath whistled shrilly past the obstruction in his nose. A film covered that part of the eyes that was visible at all. It was doubtful whether the pony could see any more. Now and then he snorted to clear his nose, and by the action seemed to plug it tighter. Jody looked dispiritedly at the pony's coat. The hair lay rough and unkempt and seemed to have lost all of its old luster. Billy stood quietly beside the stall. Jody hated to ask, but he had to know. "Billy, is he going to get well?" Billy put his fingers between the bars under the pony's jaw and felt about. "Feel here," he said, and he guided Jody's fingers to a large lump under the jaw. "When that gets bigger, I'll open it up, and then he'll get better." Jody looked away, for he'd heard about that lump. "What's the matter with him?" Jody didn't want to answer, but he had to. He couldn't be wrong three times. "Strangles," he said shortly. "But don't you worry about that. I'll pull him out of it. I've seen them get well when they were worse than Gabalon is. I'm going to steam him now. You can help." "Yes," Jody said miserably. He followed Billy into the grain room and watched him make the steaming bag ready. It was a long canvas nose bag with straps to go over the horse's ears. Billy filled it one-third full of bran, and then he added a couple of handfuls of dried hops. On top of the dry substance, he poured a little carbolic acid and a little turpentine. "I'll be mixing it all up while you run to the house for a kettle of boiling water," Billy said. When Jody came back with the steaming kettle, Billy buckled the straps over Gabalon's head and fitted the bag tightly around his nose. Then, through a little hole in the side of the bag, he poured the boiling water on the mixture. The pony started away as a cloud of strong steam rose up. But then the soothing fumes crept through his nose and into his lungs, and the sharp steam began to clear out the nasal passages. He breathed loudly, his legs trembled in ague, and his eyes closed against the biting cloud. Billy poured in more water and kept the steam rising for 15 minutes. At last he set down the kettle and took the bag from Gabalon's nose. The pony looked better. He breathed freely, and his eyes were open wider than they'd been. "See how good it makes him feel," Billy said. "Now we'll wrap him up in the blanket again, and maybe he'll be nearly well by morning." "I'll stay with him tonight," Jody suggested. "No, don't you do it. I'll bring my blankets down here and put them in the hay. You can stay tomorrow and steam him if he needs it." The evening was falling when they went to the house for their supper. Jody didn't even realize that someone else had fed the chickens and filled the woodbox. He walked up past the house to the dark brush line and took a drink of water from the tub. The spring water was so cold that it stung his mouth and drove a shiver through him. The sky above the hills was still light. He saw a hawk flying so high that it caught the sun on its breast and shone like a spark. Two blackbirds were driving him down the sky, glittering as they attacked their enemy. In the west, the clouds were moving in to rain again. Jody's father didn't speak at all while the family ate supper, but after Billy Buck had taken his blankets and gone to sleep in the barn, Carl Tiflin built a high fire in the fireplace and told stories. He told about the wild man who ran naked through the country and had a tail and ears like a horse, and he told about the rabbit cats of Moro Coho that hopped into the trees for birds. He revived the famous Maxwell brothers, who found a vein of gold and hid the traces of it so carefully that they could never find it again. Jordy sat with his chin in his hands, his mouth worked nervously, and his father gradually became aware that he wasn't listening very carefully. "Isn't that funny?" he asked. Jody laughed politely and said, "Yes, sir." His father was angry and hurt then. He didn't tell any more stories. After a while, Jody took a lantern and went down to the barn. Billy Buck was asleep in the hay, and except that his breath rasped a little in his lungs, the pony seemed to be much better. Jody stayed a little while, running his fingers over the red, rough coat, and then he took up the lantern and went back to the house. When he was in bed, his mother came into the room. "Have you enough covers on? It's getting winter." "Yes, ma'am." "Well, get some rest tonight." She hesitated to go out, standing uncertainly. "The pony will be all right," she said. Jody was tired. He went to sleep quickly and didn't awaken until dawn. The triangle sounded, and Billy Buck came up from the barn before Jody could get out of the house. "How is he?" Jody demanded. Billy always wolfed his breakfast. "Pretty good. I'm going to open up that lump this morning. Then he'll be better, maybe." After breakfast, Billy got out his best knife, one with a needle point. He whetted the shining blade a long time on a little stone. He tried the point and the blade began. He tried the point and the blade again and again on his calloused thumb ball. And at last, he tried it on his upper lip. On the way to the barn, Jody noticed how the young grass was up and how the stubble was melting day by day into the new green crop of Volunteer. It was a cold, sunny morning. As soon as he saw the pony, Jody knew he was worse. His eyes were closed and sealed shut with dried mucus. His head hung so low that his nose almost touched the straw of his bed. There was a little groan in each breath, a deep-seated, patient groan. Billy lifted the weak head and made a quick slash with the knife. Jody saw the yellow pus run out. He held up the head while Billy swabbed out the wound with weak carbolic acid salve. "Now he'll feel better," Billy assured him. "That yellow poison is what makes him sick." Jody looked unbelievingly at Billy Buck. "He's awful sick." Billy thought a long time what to say. He nearly tossed off a careless assurance, but saved himself in time. Yeah, he's pretty sick, he said at last. I've seen worse ones get well. If he doesn't get pneumonia, we'll pull him through. You stay with him. If he gets worse, you can come and get me. For a long time after Billy went away, Jody stood beside the pony, stroking him behind the ears. The pony didn't flip his head the way he had done when he was well. The groaning in his breathing was becoming more hollow. Doubletree Mutt looked into the barn, his big tail waving provocatively, and Jody was so incensed at his health that he found a hard black clod on the floor and deliberately threw it. Doubletree Mutt went yelping away to nurse a bruised paw. In the middle of the morning, Billy Buck came back and made another steam bag. Jody watched to see whether the pony improved this time as he had before. His breathing eased a little, but he did not raise his head. The Saturday dragged on. Late in the afternoon, Jody went to the house and brought his bedding down and made up a place to sleep in the hay. He didn't ask permission. He knew from the way his mother looked at him that she would let him do almost anything. That night he left a lantern burning on a wire over the box stall. Billy had told him to rub the pony's legs every little while. At 9 o'clock, the wind sprang up and howled around the barn, and in spite of his worry, Jody grew sleepy. He got into his blankets and went to sleep. But the breathy groans of the pony sounded in his dreams, and in his sleep he heard a crashing noise which went on and on until it awakened him. The wind was rushing through the barn. He sprang up and looked down the lane of stalls. The barn door had blown open. The pony was gone. He caught the lantern and ran outside into the gale, and he saw Gabalon weakly shambling away into the darkness, head down, legs working slowly and mechanically. When Jody ran up and caught him by the forelock, he allowed himself to be led back and put into his stall. His groans were louder, and a fierce whistling came from his nose. Jody didn't sleep any more then. The hissing of the pony's breath grew louder and sharper. He was glad when Billy Buck came in at dawn. Billy looked for a time at the pony as though he'd never seen him before. He felt the ears and flanks. "Jody," he said, "I got to do something you won't want to see. You run up to the house for a while." Jody grabbed him fiercely by the forearm. "You're not going to shoot him?" Billy patted his hand. "No, I'm going to open him up a little hole in his windpipe so he can breathe. His nose is filled up. When he gets well, we'll put a little brass button in the hole for him to breathe through." Jody couldn't have gone away if he had wanted to. It was awful to see the red hide cut, but infinitely more terrible to know it was being cut and not to see it. "I'll stay right here," he said bitterly. "You sure you got to?" "Yes, I'm sure. If you stay, you can hold his head. If it doesn't make you sick, that is." The fine knife came out again and was whetted again just as carefully as it had been the first time. Jody held the pony's head up and the throat taut, while Billy felt up and down for the right place. Jody sobbed once as the bright knife point disappeared into the throat. The pony plunged weakly away and then stood still, trembling violently. The blood ran thickly out and up the knife and across Billy's hand and into his shirt sleeve. The sure, square hand sawed a tiny round hole in the flesh, and the breath came bursting out of the hole, throwing a fine spray of blood. With the rush of oxygen, the pony took a sudden strength. He lashed out with his hind feet and tried to rear, but Jody held his head down while Billy mopped the new wound with carbolic salve. It was a good job. The blood stopped flowing, and the air puffed out of the hole and sucked in regularly, with a little bubbling noise. The rain brought in by the night wind began to fall on the barn roof. Then the triangle rang for breakfast. "You go up and eat while I wait," Billy said. "We got to keep this hole from plugging up." Jody walked slowly out of the barn. He was too dispirited to tell Billy how the barn door had blown open and let the pony out. He emerged into the wet gray morning and sloshed up to the house, taking a perverse pleasure in splashing through all the puddles. His mother fed him and put dry clothes on. She didn't question him. She seemed to know he couldn't answer questions. But when he was ready to go back to the barn, she brought him a pan of steaming meal. "Give him this," she said. But Jody didn't take the pan. He said, "He won't eat anything," and ran out of the house. At the barn, Billy showed him how to fix a ball of cotton on a stick with which to swab out the breathing hole when it became clogged with mucus. Jody's father walked into the barn and stood with them in front of the stall. At length he turned to the boy. "Hadn't you better come with me? I'm going to drive over the hill." Jody shook his head. "You better come on out of this," his father insisted. Billy turned on him angrily. "Let him alone. It's his pony, isn't it?" Carl Tiflin walked away without saying another word. His feelings were badly hurt. All morning, Jody kept the wound open and the air passing in and out freely. At noon, the pony lay wearily down on his side and stretched his nose out. Billy came back. "If you're going to stay with him tonight, you better take a little nap," he said. Jody went absently out of the barn. The sky had cleared to a hard, thin blue. Everywhere, the birds were busy with worms that had come to the damp surface of the ground. Jody walked to the brush line and sat on the edge of the mossy tub. He looked down at the house and at the old bunkhouse and at the dark cypress tree. The place was familiar, but curiously changed. It wasn't itself anymore, but a frame for things that were happening. A cold wind blew out of the east now, signifying that the rain was over for a little while. At his feet, Jody could see the little arms of new weeds spreading out over the ground. In the mud, about the spring, were thousands of quail tracks. Doubletree Mutt came sideways and embarrassed up through the vegetable patch, and Jody, remembering how he had thrown the clod, put his arms around the dog's neck and kissed him on his wide black nose. Doubletree Mutt sat still as though he knew some solemn thing was happening. His big tail slapped the ground gravely, and Jody pulled a swollen tick out of Mutt's neck and popped it dead between his thumbnails. It was a nasty thing. He washed his hands in the cold spring water. Except for the steady swish of the wind, the farm was very quiet. Jody knew his mother wouldn't mind if he didn't go in to eat his lunch. After a little while, he went slowly back to the barn. Mutt crept into his own little house and whined softly to himself for a long time. Billy Buck stood up from the box and surrendered the cotton swab. The pony still lay on his side, and the wound in his throat bellowed in and out. When Jody saw how dry and dead the hair looked, he knew at last that there was no hope for the pony. He had seen the dead hair before on dogs and on cows, and it was a sure sign. He sat heavily on the box and let down the barrier of the box stall. For a long time, he kept his eyes on the moving wound, and at last he dozed, and the afternoon passed quickly. Just before dark, his mother brought a deep dish of stew and left it for him and went away. Jody ate a little of it, and when it was dark, he set the lantern on the floor by the pony's head so he could watch the wound and keep it open. And he dozed again until the night chill awakened him. The wind was blowing fiercely, bringing the north cold with it. Jody brought a blanket from his bed in the hay and wrapped himself in it. Gabalon's breathing was quiet, at least. The hole in his throat moved gently. The owls flew through the hayloft, shrieking and looking for mice. Jody put his hands down on his head and slept. In his sleep, he was aware that the wind had increased. He heard it slamming against the barn. It was daylight when he awakened. The barn door had swung open, and the pony was gone. He sprang up and ran out into the morning light. The pony's tracks were plain enough, dragging through the frost-like dew on the young grass, tired tracks with little lines between them where the hooves had dragged. They headed for the brush line halfway up the ridge. Jody broke into a run and followed them. The sun shone on the sharp white quartz that stuck out through the ground here and there. As he followed the plain trail, a shadow cut across in front of him. He looked up and saw a high circle of black buzzards, and the slowly revolving circle dropped lower and lower. The solemn birds soon disappeared over the ridge. Jody ran faster then, forced on by panic and rage. The trail entered the brush at last and followed a winding route along the tall sage brushes. At the top of the ridge, Jody was winded. He paused, puffing noisily. The blood pounded in his ears. Then he saw what he was looking for. Below, in one of the little clearings in the brush, lay the red pony. In the distance, Jody could see the legs moving slowly and convulsively, and in a circle around him stood the buzzards, waiting for the moment of death they knew so well. Jody leaped forward and plunged down the hill. The wet ground muffled his steps, and the brush hit him. When he arrived, it was all over. The first buzzard sat on the pony's head and its beak had just risen, dripping with dark eye fluid. Jody plunged into the circle like a cat. The Black Brotherhood arose in a cloud, but the big one on the pony's head was too late. As it hopped along to take off, Jody caught its wingtip and pulled it down. It was nearly as big as he was. The free wing crashed into his face with the force of a club, but he hung on. The claws fastened on his leg, and the wing elbows battered his head on either side. Jody groped blindly with his free hand. His fingers found the neck of the struggling bird. The red eyes looked into his face, calm and fearless and fierce. The naked head turned from side to side. Then the beak opened and vomited a stream of putrefied fluid. Jody brought up his knee and fell on the great bird. He held the neck to the ground with one hand while his other hand found a piece of sharp white quartz. The first blow broke the beak sideways, and a thick black blood spurted from the twisted leathery mouth corners. He struck again and missed. The red, fearless eyes still looked at him, impersonal and unafraid and detached. He struck again and again until the buzzard lay dead, until its head was a red pulp. He was still beating the dead bird when Billy Buck pulled him off and held him tightly to calm his shaking. Carl Tiflin wiped the blood from the boy's face with a red bandana. Jody was limp and quiet now. His father moved the buzzard with his toe. "Jody," he explained, "the buzzards didn't kill the pony. Don't you know that?" "I know it," Jody said wearily. It was Billy Buck who was angry. He had lifted Jody in his arms and had turned to carry him home, but he turned back on Carl Tiflin. "Course he knows it," Billy said furiously. "Jesus Christ, man, can't you see how he'd feel about it?" And that's the end of that chapter. There are three more chapters to The Red Pony, and we will pick them up again next Friday with a chapter titled The Great Mountains. What time is it? It went a little bit longer, but it's okay. That is an American classic short story from John Steinbeck titled The Red Pony. And as I mentioned before, this book is broken down into four segments that were published in a serial. And the next one will be called The Great Mountains. It involves the same characters, Jody, Billy Buck, and Mom and Dad. And the next part of this story will be called The Great Mountains, and that'll be next Friday night when we come back on more on Reading with Rick. That's it for this Friday night. Have yourself as good a weekend as you can. Students, good luck on Monday when a whole new way to go to school takes place for everybody. So enjoy your weekend, get a good night's sleep, and we'll talk to you later here as Reading with Rick will return Monday night. Again, we'll go back with a youngster's book, and then we'll come back with Shelley Bean, the Sports Queen, written by local author Shelley Boyum Breen. That'll be coming up on Monday. So for now, good night, everybody.